For years, the pro-life movement worked against the Supreme Court's 1973 abortion decision, Roe v. Wade. And one group is called the Justice Foundation, founded in 1993, and their goal is to seek to protect the fundamental freedoms and rights essential to the preservation of American society by providing free legal services to promote those rights. Well, in 2000, they began to get involved in the fight against Roe v. Wade. The founder and leader of the Justice Foundation is Alan Parker. The website notes this. Alan Parker, president of the Justice Foundation, was lead counsel for Norma McCorvey, formerly Roe, of Roe v. Wade from 2000 to 2012, and Sandra Cano, the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, which, by the way, was a companion decision to Roe v. Wade, and it was decided the very same day, January 22nd, 1973. And they worked on this until 2014 in their efforts to overturn the two landmark cases that brought legalized abortion on demand to America. Alan Parker joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Alan, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jerry, for having me on and for all the information you help share with the public.
Sure. And, you know, so interesting to me that did you ever think Roe v. Wade would officially be overturned? And within, you know, it didn't even reach its 50th anniversary, and yet that happened. It got overturned.
That's right. I'm happy to say that my wife and I were married in 1973. So we're celebrating our 49th anniversary, and we have survived longer than Roe v. Wade has. So that's good news.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Tell us about what happened with Norma McCorvey and how she changed and so forth, and then how you got involved with her to help try and overturn Roe.
Well, thank you. And this story that I'm about to share with you about Norma is, in her own words, on our website at thejusticefoundation.org. And it's in her sworn testimony that she gave to the Supreme Court when we represented her and asked her, she asked them to reverse her own case. So Norma did want an abortion. She was pregnant with her third child, but she never had an abortion, because it only takes 9 months to bring a baby to birth, and it took 3 years to get to the Supreme Court and strike down the law. So she never had an abortion. So she was pro-abortion from about 1973 to about 1993 or 94, almost 20 years. But it wasn't until she began to work in the abortion clinics and saw the horrible reality of abortion as opposed to the pretty rhetoric that it should be a woman's choice between her and her doctor and all of this stuff. She began to work in abortion clinics, and her conscience began to bother her. And she began to see the callous disregard of women, the unsanitary conditions, and the disrespect for women, the failure to give them adequate counseling, all these things that she talks about in her affidavits. And her conscience began to bother her, actually, because she was involved in killing human beings. And sometimes, for example, the women would say, well, is it a baby? And that's a very common question for women, to which the abortion industry generally gives a false and misleading answer. But Norma, when she sort of started having conflicting feelings, she said, what do you think it is, a fish? What are you going to give birth to but a baby, you know? And anyway, her conscience began to bother her. Pro-life counselors began to move in next to her facility where she worked, and they began to witness to her. And a young girl who was a daughter at 8 years old of a sidewalk counselor named Emily invited her to church, and she heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. She heard John 3:16, the most famous Bible verse in the Bible. And she said, that's for me. And she kind of went down and gave her life to Jesus Christ as her Lord and Savior, and asked for forgiveness of her sins, and was baptized in a swimming pool in 1995 on ABC News. Wow. So it was a very dramatic conversion.
Huh. And then later she became a Catholic, I understand. And but what's weird is that there was a documentary in which she claimed, oh, it was all an act, and she essentially denounced her pro-life views, or so it seemed. I'm sure
yes.
You're familiar with
let
that
me,
story.
Let me, Yeah, let me tell you my version of that, and our statement about that's on our website too, and as a press release. Before she died, she had a COPD. She went into a nursing home.
Okay, what does that mean? What does COPD mean?
Pulmonary embolism. It's a lung disease. You can't breathe very well.
Okay.
I can't remember what the initials stand for.
That's fine.
But
got the idea.
Lung disease. Okay. And so she couldn't be pro-life and go around fighting against it. And I kept in touch with her until her death. And, you know, a few months before or so, maybe, certainly within probably 6 months or so, I don't remember exactly. But I called her and said, how's things going? She said she thanked me for helping her try to reverse her own case. And every year around the anniversary of Aunt Roe v. Wade, she felt guilty for the death of another million children. And we were afraid often that she would, you know, perhaps harm herself because she got so depressed and in a black hole. We kind of watched over her. Well, she said, I'm doing a pro-life documentary with some people from England, and they're paying me for my story, which is legit. I said, great, that's good news. Because if people who are going to make money off of it do your story, it's not uncommon to get paid for that, and it's legitimate and fair. But she said it was pro-life. So then she died. I went to her funeral. I preached at her funeral at the family's request, told how Norma spent her life trying to reverse the decision she was involved in. 3 years after she died, when there was an important case about abortion at the Supreme Court, which was the Louisiana Hospital Admitting Privileges case, that documentary came out. She was not alive to refute it. I'm sure they took many, many hours of testimony. And I don't believe she changed her mind. I believe it's my personal opinion. I'm saying I haven't seen all the editing, but I think it was selective editing. And, you know, she was kind of a wisecracking lady. And, you know, she chuckles this. It's my deathbed confession. And she kind of chuckled about it, but she could have been talking about anything. And Norma didn't have any trouble keeping her opinions to herself. I think if she had felt betrayed by the pro-life movement and had decided to come forth, I think she'd have called everybody up and chewed them out and cussed at them perhaps or something. I don't know. I mean, but I do know this. I'm a Christian. I believe she sincerely got baptized in the pool. I prayed with her many times over the years. When I first met her, she said, Mr. Parker, I don't like to speak in public, but Jesus tells me I'm supposed to do it, and I'm going to do it. And she had low education, and she had to be on the world stage. And even in that little documentary, I kind of close with this, there's a sign in her room in one of the pictures, Jesus is my boyfriend. Well, that's kind of Norma's philosophy. To me, that means I love Jesus, he loves me. And I think she was a sincere Christian. I think she may have had compassion for difficult circumstances. She may not have known or thought about the safe haven laws, which the Supreme Court mentions in this Dobbs case. Today, if you live in a state that bans abortion, no woman in America has to parent a child if she's not able to parent that child or she doesn't want to parent that child, because the safe haven law allows a woman to relinquish a baby at a hospital or fire station or other designated safe place within a certain period of time after birth, and she is free of the child. There's no cost, unlike an expensive abortion. There's no trauma that comes from killing your child, like the thousands of women I also represented in this Dobbs case can testify and did testify. We put over 4,700 sworn testimonies of women hurt by abortion. And by the way, Norma loved the women of Operation Outcry. She felt terribly bad for having allowed abortion to come to America so these women were hurt. And many of our women prayed with her and loved Norma over the years. I mean, you just can't fake stuff like that, you know, for 20 years as she was supposedly faking it. And even her pro-abortion biographer, Joshua Prager, who wrote a book about Norma and her family, and he's very pro-abortion, he said that was an unfair charge against Norma that she just sold out and accepted money from the pro-life side. The other thing I say is, if Norma wanted money, it's the pro-abortion side that has all the money. She could have made a fortune switching back if that was her motive, and that never happened.
You mentioned the Dobbs case. How did you participate in the Dobbs case? Did your organization, the Justice Foundation, maybe provide some friend of the court briefs? Is that what you're referring to? Something like that?
Yes. Actually, we filed 5 briefs in the Dobbs case, more than any other organization America. And the first one we represented was Melinda Thibault, the founder of the Moral Outcry petition. And we had over 500,000 signers of the Moral Outcry petition, which answered the question legally, why should Roe v. Wade be reversed today? And you can still go to our website and sign this petition. At this time, it says petition to the Supreme Court, but we're going to change it, a petition to abolish abortion in all 50 states. And here's the 3 major reasons. Well, I'll give there's 5. I'll give them. 1, abortion is a crime against humanity. It's killing a human being. That's as bad as segregation and slavery were in America. And Justice Alito makes that point by comparing this to the segregation case, that the Supreme Court allowed segregation for 58 years and said it was the law of the land until Brown v. Board of Education, when they reversed their own case. So the people who are fighting for abortion today might as well be saying segregation forever, like the segregationists did. It's time to go to a better word. The second argument is abortion hurts women. The court admitted it causes devastating psychological consequences, severe depression and loss of esteem. And the abortion industry lies and misrepresents that to women. And I believe we're going to see billions of dollars in damages forked over from the abortion industry to women eventually. Number 3 is the safe haven law is a better alternative. Don't kill the baby. Don't hurt yourself. Give us the baby through the safe haven law, us as society. And then the 4th argument is, what will happen to those children? They're going to end up in foster care? No. It's a scientific fact. There are 1 to 2 million women every year in America waiting to adopt newborn children.
Of all colors?
They can't have a baby.
Of all races?
Yes, exactly. Yes, look, Amy Coney Barrett's on the Supreme Court. She adopted black children. She knows that day is done. Ketanji Brown, the newest member of the court, is in a biracial marriage. Clarence Thomas and his wife are a biracial couple. Those days are gone. I'm not saying there's not some people here or there who have hatred, but that's true for everybody, you know. But the days we've elected a black president, those days of truly widespread racial because of skin color are gone. Look at your TV. There's biracial couples everywhere. And people who are desperate to adopt children are happy to accept children of a different race. And so it's just ridiculous. And then the last argument is new science shows life begins at conception. We represented Hannah, the first formerly frozen embryo to ever file a brief at the U.S. Supreme Court. Wow. We're all former embryos, but she was frozen for 2.5 years, conceived in vitro fertilization, waited for 2.5 years to be adopted by her current biological mother. I mean, her adoptive mother, but who's also her birth mother, because her frozen embryo was placed in her adopting mom and she was born. That didn't happen in 1973. It didn't exist. And the court said in 73, well, at this state in the development of man's knowledge, we don't know when life begins. You can't say that today. The science deniers are on the pro-abortion side. It's not a human being. It's not a baby. What do you think it is? As Norma said, a fish. Human mothers and human fathers produce human babies.
All right.
And it's not an amphibian there.
And that's excellent. TheJusticeFoundation.org for more information. Sorry that we're out of time, but Alan Parker, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, sir.